Welcome to Making Way Podcast, a podcast about finding your own path in life. We're sharing stories to encourage you to live your life how you want to live it and not how you're supposed to. Who we are is not a solo endeavor. We are often bombarded with messages around self-love as an individual pursuit. We need to be good on our own before we can be with someone else. We need to learn how to love ourselves by ourselves. This is the myth of self-love. It's about letting others love us even when we feel unlovable. It highlights the power of interdependence and vulnerability in the journey of self-acceptance. True self-love is not achieved alone, but thrives in the embrace of collective love and acceptance. By acknowledging the significance of external support, we can foster a more profound sense of self-love. Today's guests are Jordan and Barry, also known as the Brownstone Boys. Now, if you haven't heard of these guys yet, they're the creative minds behind transforming Brooklyn brownstones into absolute masterpieces. But hold on, this episode isn't just about renovations and design. In this intimate chat, they let their guard down and discuss the journey they've been on that led them to where they are today. Throughout their stories, there is an unintentional thread that highlights the importance of surrounding yourself with supportive friends, a community you love, and of course, each other. I dare you not to fall in love with Jordan and Barry. So, thank you guys for being here so much. Let's start very easy. Where are you guys from? You know, when either of you guys can start.
I'm originally from a place called Las Vegas. Don't know if you've heard of it, but yeah, I was born and raised in Las Vegas, Nevada. And the day I graduated high school is the day I moved to New York.
Oh, wow. Okay, so let's backtrack a little bit. So growing up in Vegas, what was that like?
It was wild. I mean, it's all I knew when I was a kid. So for me, it was very normal. Mm-hmm. But I always knew from either watching TV or wanting to travel, that there was so much life outside of Las Vegas.
By the Strip or not by the Strip?
About like 20 minutes off the Strip, in a small area called Summerlin.
Okay.
Very residential. Hey, Summerlin.
Someone's out there.
But I always knew that Vegas was a place that after I graduated high school, I was going to leave. And I had just always dreamed of moving to New York City.
What about Vegas didn't feel right for you?
The culture.
Okay.
I remember going on a trip with friends. Actually, it was part of a theater group when I was younger. We came to New York and it was, wow, I was like 9 years old, I think. And I knew at that moment that that was like, I'm going to live in New York City one day. And I'm going to like live and I always saw like Sesame Street and Sex and the City and on the TV. And I think that's what kind of always put in my mind that I was going to live in New York City. But that trip really, like, I just remember from like 9 to 18 being like, Mom, Dad, I'm moving to New York City as soon as I graduate high school. They're like, and my mom knew it. My mom knew at a very early age that Jordan is not meant for Las Vegas, and she would always like try to book us on city trips just to see other places, which was always amazing. My parents are both from the East Coast.
How did they end up in Vegas?
Interesting. So my father went out there for hotel management in the late 60s, early 70s. So he's one of those original Vegas guys.
Yeah,
that went
like
out
when
there.
Elvis was there.
Exactly. And he went out for hotel management. So he worked for Caesar's Palace forever, and my mom followed him. She was a teacher. She still is a teacher. She needs to retire, but they love it. And as an adult, I love going back there and visiting. It's so big. The desert is gorgeous. I don't know if you've been, but it's such a beautiful place. But it's a beautiful place to visit.
What were you like as a kid? Like, how would people describe you? If your mom would describe you?
I was a smiley kid. I smiled a lot, and I was always curious about everything. I just remember always telling my parents that I was like, I was wanting to see the world. And I was very animated. I was very, I was creative. I remember one of my favorite activities was getting all the kids on our block that were all very into sports for them to do a play with me. And we would stage a play in our garage, and the garage was our curtain, and the curtain would go up. And I was just, I was always wanting to do creative projects, whether it be art or theater or film, which is what I went to school for.
Guess what the theme was for his bar mitzvah?
What was it?
Broadway. Yeah, the theme. Okay, this is a cool story about my bar mitzvah. Wayne Brady, pre him being the host of Whose Line Is It Anyways, was on the DJ circuit for bar mitzvahs. And my parents hired Wayne Brady before he was famous.
What?
And he was the DJ at my bar mitzvah. And I have
Before he's famous.
Before he was famous. I have video footage of him dressed in a cat suit singing Memory from Cats.
We all had to start somewhere.
Exactly. We all had to start somewhere. And yeah, it's been a wild ride just seeing him turn into the superstar that he is. And yeah.
You know, obviously going to New York in high school was very influential to you. You knew that's where you wanted to go. And then college was coming around, which college, I feel like for so many of us, that's where like our jumping off point of like creating the life we want to. What did you study in college?
Yeah, so I went to a conservatory that was part of a bigger university, UConn. But the campus that I specifically went to school for was based in New York. So this was 3 weeks pre 9/11.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Yeah, so it was quite a time to arrive in the city and make this my home. And then when 9/11 happened, I was in Brooklyn at the time, but I just knew in that moment, after the freak and everything that what happened, mm-hmm. I knew that this was going to be my home forever.
What about it?
I just saw a sense of community that I've never seen before. I've seen people genuinely like just concerned for each other. And while New York is probably the largest city in the world, there was just this looking out and this like everyone just looking at each other with the eye contact. And you can just feel that they were genuinely.
Everyone knew everyone was hurting at that time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that feeling still sticks with me to this day. And I just remember that was just like, I'm a New Yorker.
Yeah. Did you pursue film in college though? You wanted to be a film director?
Long story short. Yeah. I did want to be a film director. That was the dream. And I heard in school that you would have to work up the ladder. And I remember getting my first production assistant job. Mm-hmm. And I think I was hired at like, I want to say it was $12 an hour. Mm-hmm. And I had to show up on set at 9:30 at night and then work overnight till like 10 o'clock in the morning. And I remember that job and just like, I was so energized and so excited to be part of set and working so hard. And I thought after that day, I got hit by like 4 different trucks. And I just remember like just being exhausted from that experience. And I was like, I can't do this. This isn't made out for me. And I had to put myself through school. So randomly, backing up to Vegas, during high school, I also worked at a bakery. My dad had a wedding center at the time, and part of the center was a bakery, and just going, helping my dad out. And I just took such an attraction at working at the bakery. So I put myself through college here, working at this bakery in Red Hook, Brooklyn. And the guys that owned the bakery were expanding their bakery, and they were opening up a shop in Manhattan, and they asked me to design their kitchen as this new bakery. And it became such a passion project. This was a couple years after the whole film thing.
Sure.
But I became so attracted to designing that one kitchen. And I was like, I think I like design. Mm. And then later, they had poached me out to an ice cream company. And then that's when I really became a designer, because I joined Ample Hills Creamery when they were at 3 ice cream shops. And I joined their team, and I helped them expand into 16 different shops throughout New York. Mm-hmm. We opened up a shop in LA and Orlando, and it was all commercial, mm-hmm. on the commercial side of design.
I see. So you worked at that bakery, then you designed their kitchen. Mm-hmm. That's kind of like your first taste of design.
Yep.
Now you started working in this ice cream shop as...
It was after Baked was the bakery that I worked for. I want to say it was 5 or 6 months after they opened up their Tribeca location. Mm-hmm. And that was the kitchen that I helped design. Okay. They had asked me what I thought of it. I was like, I loved it. If you know anybody else that needs help. And then that's when they put me in touch with the owners of Ample Hills.
I see. So at that point you knew, okay, this is what I'm going to pursue now. That was a pivot there.
Yeah. I think for the design side, mm-hmm. it was. I joined Ample Hills not really having a set job description, but I knew that the owners of this ice cream company were needing a lot of help. So I wore different hats, but the largest hat I wore was helping them once they found a new location and they were working with the architect to kind of project manage from start to finish the whole build of that ice cream shop.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, well, now let's catch up with your life.
Sorry, I'm going to stop talking
this
about me.
This is great. No, we want all these details. Okay, so you're from a very different part of the country. So where are you from?
So I am from New Orleans. So I grew up in the South. I went to LSU. And love New Orleans. It's an amazing place to visit. It was actually a really amazing place to grow up.
In the main city area?
Yeah. So I grew up about 20 minutes from the French Quarter. And then when I, the last few years that I was there, I lived like right uptown New Orleans, was like 10 minutes from the French Quarter. Mm-hmm. So yeah, right in the middle of it. It was very fun. Lots of culture, lots of great music, lots of great food, of course. But I left when I was 25 and I moved to Boston. And growing up, I always wanted to be an architect. I knew I was going to be an architect all through high school.
Where did that start? How did you get your first like inspiration for that?
I actually don't really know. I mean, I remember I used to draw when I was like really young, like probably way too young to even be concerned about these things. I used to love like drawing floor plans of houses and designing houses. Like I would draw different floor plans and I would rearrange things and think about how different it could work or what would you know make for good functionality in a house. Like I was probably like 8 in drawing floor plans of houses.
Yeah.
And so I just always knew that's what I wanted to do. So all through high school, all the kids were thinking about what they wanted to do and trying to figure it out and not knowing, you know, where they wanted to go. I knew I wanted to be an architect, so I applied to different architecture schools and actually got into the School of Architecture at LSU, which was great because it was State University in Louisiana, worked really well for me, and I was like happy about that. So I went to architecture school at LSU, moved to Baton Rouge, which is like an hour and a half from New Orleans, and I had to actually put myself through school. I was like the first, like no one else in my family really went to college. I was like the first one. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really get a lot of help mm-hmm. with it. And my parents didn't have like the finances to help me. Mm-hmm. But you know, they supported me in other ways for sure. But financially, like I had to support myself. I had to get an apartment. I had to like work and pay rent and all of that stuff. Yeah. Fortunately, I did get a scholarship for school. So I didn't have to pay tuition. It was in-state anyway. But
wait, I want to know though, what were you like as a kid? Like how would people describe you as a kid?
I mean, that's a good question. I mean, I was probably a quieter kid. I don't think I was always kind of a little bit shy. Mm. And I had an older brother and he would pick on me a lot. And I did fight back, but probably not that much. But yeah, I was probably a quieter kid. Like I was not like the kid that had tons of friends or I don't think into high school that I like really have a lot of friends and like really got into a good group of friends.
You were the Duke of your high school though, right?
I was the Duke.
What? I know. Okay.
I was a Duke at my prom.
Yeah,
definitely. Like I think I changed a lot during high school. Like,
what happened in high school?
So a lot of the friends I had in high school, Jordan and I talk about this, it comes up a lot because I ended up having like a lot of friends that were fun and loud in high school. And I remember because I was quieter growing up and a little bit more shy, I remember having to fight to say something, to get a word in to the conversation. Like I had to, you know, really like it was my job. Like no one else was going to make sure that I was there.
Yeah.
So I had to figure out how to do that. And I remember it was like difficult for a little while for me until like I felt comfortable and was able to figure it out. And I actually remember like, I kind of always think about how now I'm a little, I don't mind, like I'm confident about talking. Mm-hmm. And I was not that way at all when I was younger. And it was like this group of friends I had in high school that made, like, forced me to be that way. Right. Anyway, so that's, you know, I guess that's my kind of high school years. And it was good. And I actually ended up being a Duke in my prom. And that was like a voted, like
that's
people
like prom
vote
king,
you. Yeah.
Duke? Okay.
Exactly. Well,
I
not
didn't
prom
know
king.
What that was either. I was like, what is a Duke?
So there's
like,
what year is this?
There's like the royal, the court, right? So there's the king and the queen. Okay. And then there's
so
other people that are, you know, like dukes and duchesses. I don't know. Is that the female part?
Yes. Yeah.
And so it's like one, you know, there might, maybe there's like five people in the class that are voted for that. So yeah.
It was wow. Fun. It really shaped
you
though.
I had a banner. Like I wore a banner.
Fancy.
Do you still have it?
No. Not at all. I have not one thing left from high school. It's all gone.
Oh, man. Okay, so high school, and then, you know, knowing you wanted to pursue architecture, went to architecture school, and then what was that like after graduating, now going into the real world of architecture?
Didn't happen.
Oh.
Did not happen. I am an architecture school dropout. Okay. I stuck with it for like 2 years. Oh. And it was great. And I actually really enjoyed it. It was like really fun for me in a lot of ways. And there's a lot of studio work, which was really fun. And we made different models. And it starts in the first couple of years as very conceptual. Mm-hmm. So you're not really like doing the things that you do as an architect after you graduate. But, you know, you're learning about space and you're learning about design and you're learning about modeling and that sort of thing. So the thing that with it is, it's just a lot of work. Like architectural school is very rigorous. It's a 5-year program, and it's very difficult to have a job and be in architectural school. Most of the kids in architectural school, you know, are not working. Like they're only going to school, and I couldn't do that. Like I had to work and put myself through school, and didn't have the ability to not have a job.
I see.
So I just remember it. After a couple of years, I ended up getting to the point where I was like, I don't think I can do this. Like, I don't think I can get through it. And they also do a really good job of talking you out of it the entire time. And, you know, they tell you that you're never going to get a job. There's not work out there for architects. It's like very difficult to get, it's very difficult to get to a point where it like really provides a good income. And also you have to do after the 5-year program, you have to do a 2-year apprenticeship where you make pretty much minimum wage before you can get licensed. So, I decided I would change my major. And so I went to the School of Business and got a business degree. So I did graduate, just not with architectural degree. And I was disappointed about it because I always wanted to be an architect, but got a business degree, and I went into software sales when I got out of school.
So how did that happen?
I have no idea. Actually, I went into before I went to software sales, I went into advertising sales. So that was my first job out of school.
Which
I worked
was good
for
money, right?
Yeah, it was good. I mean, I was like obviously very entry level person, and I worked for a publishing company in New Orleans that published a bunch of magazines, like a bunch of local magazines. Like New Orleans Magazine was one of them, and then there was a bunch of other ones too. I think we had 10 magazines. They're all local though, and 2 radio stations, which was actually kind of fun because I sold advertising across all of the magazines and the radio stations, and so a lot of times I was like in the studio where they were recording, and the radio stations were like news, like it was like a talk news station, and there was another one that I can't remember what the other one was, but the main one was the talk news. So it wasn't like, you know, DJs or anything fun. It was like boring talk news. But I used to be able to like be part
I'm sorry,
of it.
Nobody scooped you up for like radio at that point? Like your voice, I mean, anybody?
He has such a radio.
I did. Yeah. They did let me record a couple of voiceover like ad things. I did do that. But it was fun because I used to go into the studio and I would sort of like help with designing the ads. And I got to be creative in that way, even though I was in sales. And so, you know, would work with our like editorial team and on things and stuff. So it was fun. So I did that for 2 years, super fun job, like very social, like selling ad space and working for a publishing company. We were like always going to everything and tickets to everything and dinners and lunches and that sort of thing. So that was, and it was a publishing company that was very like New Orleans. Mm. So it was like anything in New Orleans, you know, was, we were part of it. So that was great. And then I went to software after that because I got sales experience and software was, I don't know, it just seemed like something different and fun and cool. And then Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans like 6 months after I started the software sales job. And after that, after like some back and forth, I ended up transferring to Boston. With the company. So lived in Boston for a few years and I actually had the option to go to Boston or Huntington Beach, California. Those are the two options. And I chose Boston and a lot of people would probably think that's crazy.
Yeah. How did you make that decision?
I think it was because I just appreciated like the architecture and the history and like the character and the charm of a city like Boston after living in New Orleans and also being, you know, having a love of architecture and design.
Your life would have been so different had you chose Huntington Beach, California.
Yeah, wow. And no offense to anyone or anything in Huntington Beach, California. I'm sure it's beautiful, but it's not known for, you know, charming architecture, like Boston is anyway, and the Northeast is, as New Orleans is. Mm-hmm. So that is probably why I chose to go to Boston, but I was still in software sales at the time. So. After living there for 3 years, really loved Boston, met a ton of friends there, just like immediately made friends in Boston. Still to this day, my closest friends are the friends I met in Boston, but they all live in New York. I don't know one person that lives in Boston anymore. So after 3 years or so, I got a little tired of Boston. It's a small city, and it's close to New York, and I was coming to New York a lot. I made some friends in New York. And I decided I would just move to New York because why not? So still in software sales, kind of moved around different companies, you know, worked for a few startup companies and had a good time with that. But it was, you know, it paid well. Like it was a decent living being in software sales. And I never lost my passion for architecture and design. And I decided I didn't want to just rent. I wanted to like buy my own apartment and have my own place and make it my own. And so I scraped together.
How much money were you making?
I mean, not really that much.
Let's just
say
a lot more than a baker's salary.
Yeah. I wasn't even making six digits, to be honest with you. Like it was like a okay living, but nothing like too crazy. But I decided I was going to buy my first apartment. It was a one-bedroom apartment. I had to scrape together, like, every single dime I could get my hands on. I was, like, I was broke for, like, 2 years after I bought it. I actually did a special program for first-time home buyers where you could put down, like, a low percentage. Like, I think I put down 5% or something like that. So I got my first place, and I did some renovations to it, and then I sold it 2 years later for more than I bought it for.
And it was in an area that at that time you were not really buying property.
Yeah, it was also like in an up and coming area.
In Brooklyn?
In Brooklyn.
What area was it?
It was in downtown Brooklyn.
Oh, which now it's like, damn, should have held that.
Exactly.
It was in downtown Brooklyn before any of the new stuff that's down there, nothing was down there.
This is only like, the downtown Brooklyn is like only 10 years maybe.
Totally.
Now,
right? It's about 10 years ago. Yeah. So it was actually more than 10 years ago because when I bought it, it was like there was not anything down there at all. There were none of the new towers.
I used to work at the Applebee's on the DeKalb station.
Oh, yeah.
So I know.
Yeah, you know that.
So it was on Skimmerhorn Street.
Oh, yeah.
Which I'm sure you're familiar with. Oh, yeah. That's horrible. Now there's like so much down there. But at the time, it was like literally there was no service. There was
nothing. Yeah.
I don't even know if Applebee's was there. Maybe not. Anyway, so I sold it a couple of years later. And by the time that neighborhood kind of like things started opening up a little bit and it got a little better. I was like, this is fun. Like I bought a place. I lived in it for 2 years. I sold it. And then I had a little pool of money from that to buy another place. And so I bought a new apartment. And this place needed like to be totally gut renovated. So it was the type of place you walk into and you're like, oh, this needs some work. So I renovated it. It took like 6 months. I moved into it. I again spent every single penny that I could find on it and then the renovation. And it was amazing. Like, the renovation, like, it totally transformed this space. It was so cool to sit there and be like, wow, this place is amazing. And then I sold that place 2 years later. I always lived in the place for, like, 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And
capital gains tax.
Exactly. That's exactly why. You live there for 2 years, you don't have to pay capital gains. And I sold it for a lot more than I bought it for, like, a lot more than I bought it for. And I was like, I could do this. Like, I could do it again. I could buy another place, and I could renovate it, and I could make it into something that other people would want, that they would walk into and love. And so I did it a couple more times. Like, I bought another place, I renovated it and sold it and did it, I think, 5 times. Yeah. I think our closing was my 9th real estate closing.
Crazy.
When we bought our place together.
Meanwhile, I was renting the same 500 square foot apartment in Prospect Heights.
Oh, wow. Great neighborhood.
Loved it. Yeah. Back in 2001, though, it was quite not a nice.
Too,
yeah, it was a little so sketch, but I just really lucked out that the family that owned the building took me under. They're like my New York family, I call them, and they gave me a really great deal, and I just stayed put, and it allowed me to save some money.
Yeah.
So this is like 2017 now.
We met in 2017.
Yeah.
So your experience has been flipping homes and doing the work, and then your experience is working in more corporate side, renovating corporate spaces. Yeah. So no real, like, formal training per se, but
except for my 2 years of architecture school.
Don't forget that. But that blows my mind because, I mean, your work is beautiful. Like, I will scroll. I think that when I first discovered you guys, I looked at everything. I was like, YouTube, Instagram. Well, I want to know, I guess, well, maybe we should start there, which is how do you guys get inspired? Or, like, how did you guys learn design techniques and, you know, all that stuff, that thought that goes into it?
I think for us, something that inspires us most is the homes that we work on. So we're very fortunate that New York, and specifically Brownstone Brooklyn, in our opinion, has some of the most beautiful architecture. So the homes really inspire us to kind of set the tone and the design for the space.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 100%. Like, right? I mean, that's always the star of the show, for us anyway, because we get to work, at least in the majority of the type of projects we work in. Their brownstones are beautiful. They have all this great history. They have all these original features that we can restore.
But you guys pull designs from a lot of different styles. Like, there's a Parisian European style. There's, like, Scandinavian, more modern. Like,
yeah, we don't really do styles.
Okay.
It's one of the things that we always kind of believe in, and it's probably just because we don't have really kind of like training.
Yeah.
Is we like. We see things we like. Like, we see spaces we like, and we. There are things that speak to us, mm-hmm. and that's how we'll design a house. Yeah. And it doesn't, I don't care if it's like mid-century modern in here, and we have this Victorian mirror, and then we have a Scandinavian inspired mm-hmm. modern kitchen. And then we did, like, you can mix it up. I don't think you need to make your house like an ode to one style or stick to a theme, you know, it's a theme house. Right. It's just whatever you love and whatever you think is beautiful and whatever speaks to you.
Like, our style really is brownstone style. So, and I take that as a sense of, like, a client hires us, we walk into this beautiful home that usually is built in the late 1800s, early 1900s. That is inspiring our design. And then the second part of that style is us interacting with our clients and getting to know who they are as people and bringing in their style into their what we hope is going to be their forever home.
Yeah. How do you do that? Because that has to be hard. I feel like, because a lot of people can't articulate style. They're like, I'll know it when I see it or something.
Yeah.
You know? How do you draw that out?
For us, it's like, at least for me, when we do site visits or showroom visits with clients, I see them smile. I see them react in a way that I know when they love something. And it's that feeling that I want to get into their home, whether it be a light fixture, whether it be hardwood floors. There's so many different elements to play with when renovating a full entire house. Mm-hmm. And I just try to get that feeling. Mm-hmm. I always ask the clients, I'm inspired by music. Mm-hmm. So I always ask them to create a playlist. How do you want to feel when you walk inside your home? Or how do you want to feel when you walk inside your living room, your kitchen? And then that will help me kind of set my, give them some ideas mm-hmm. that maybe they're not thinking about. Mm-hmm. And the music really inspires me.
Wow, that's, I'm just shocked by your story. Because it's not, it's just not easy. And like to be able to have a vision and then execute on that vision and put it together and then, but then serve a client to do that. I mean, how did you guys, I mean, well, I guess maybe let's start with how you guys met, because I think you'll all kind of build on each other. So how did you guys meet?
We met on Grindr.
A really classy way. We met on Grindr. Yeah. And we met like I like to say that we both met each other when we both really needed, at a point in our life where we both really needed each other. At least I really needed Barry. Talked for several weeks, and on Grindr knowledge, that's like unheard of. So we talked for a long while before we actually physically met. And
What point in your life were you that you felt like you needed Barry?
For me, I was recently divorced, and I was going through a lot of just like mental things, you know, like questioning why I was living in New York, questioning what I was doing with my career. A lot of questioning around my own personal self that I feel like I needed somebody to just get all my thoughts out to. And, you know, also like I wasn't the type of person that enjoyed being on the apps and that, but I didn't really know how to meet people. Yeah. So I was going through a lot of stuff personally that I just was really at a point that I needed to find somebody. And, yeah.
Like a listening ear.
Exactly.
Yeah. Were you nervous to maybe like meet someone new and say like, hey, I'm going through all this stuff and to share that with that person?
I definitely was. I am an open book, but at the same time, when it comes to like my personal life and I'll bring dating into my personal life, have a really hard time like opening up, but I was so desperate to like open up to somebody that wasn't, I have really great friends, but I like was wanting that intimate interaction as well too, that I can open up with.
What was it that Barry provided that was different from the other people you were talking to that you're like, I feel like I could really talk to this guy?
I felt when I first met Barry in person, like everything that he just said about him being a shy kid, like I saw that first time I met him. And I also felt that he also was wanting somebody to talk to and like to open up about, because I feel like he had lived a life that he also was wanting to share some things with, and like having somebody to support him going through whatever he was going through.
What was it like for you to meet Jordan?
I mean, I think we felt very similarly. So when we first started talking and chatting before we even met in person, like I think we both realized that there was something there. Like we chatted nonstop, and I definitely felt like a really strong connection. Like immediately, there was just something about the way. I don't know. There was some of the attention that we gave one another and how special we made one another feel. And I think I knew that there was something special there, like immediately.
Was it not intimidating to hear maybe like some of the things that, you know, someone you just met to hear what they were going through and then to be that person?
I don't think we really knew that necessarily right away, that we were that to one another, you know? Like, I think it started out casual enough. Of course, we, like, shared things about our pasts and, you know, but, like, in a more...
I wasn't going to go to him and be like, oh, I'm just recently divorced.
Here's all my stuff, yeah.
Here's all my baggage.
Yeah, but, I mean, even the short period of time, it was pretty quick, right, in terms of opening up and sharing.
Oh, for sure. I mean, we bought our house together after 7 months of dating.
I read that. Oh,
which
my
is
God.
Pretty wild when you think about it. So a lot happened real fast in those 7 months.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I would like to believe when you know, you know. And I just kind of felt something in that moment.
I mean, as someone who was just recently divorced, I'm assuming obviously with that person was someone who you thought, this is my person. Were you scared or like?
I was really scared. And I also had a really big trust issue because it completely blindsided me. I had met the previous person that, you know, were oddly still connected because we share a dog, which is crazy. But I was just very blindsided, and I had put all of my time, energy, focus, everything mm-hmm. into making that relationship what I thought was the word perfect. And I hate that word because I'm thankful that I went through everything I went through because it taught me so much. Mm-hmm. But having that all like just taken away from you when you're completely blindsided, really, it does a lot to you. And I'm imagining everybody has their own instance. But for me, that was the thing that really everything just came.
What was your idea of perfect with this person or in a relationship, I guess?
I just had built him up in my head and being like, this is the perfect person. This is the perfect marriage. We're going to be doing this together and living our life and everything. And, you know, I come from a family that my parents are still together. Mm-hmm. And I think I just put a lot of pressure on myself, even though my parents never gave me that pressure. I just put a lot of thoughts on my own self that I had to find that person I was going to be with for the rest of my life. And both of us work successful jobs and this and this. So mm-hmm. I was at that stage in my life where I felt all of that weight on my shoulders. Mm-hmm.
What was it like to maybe restabilize yourself or like put all the pieces back together?
Yeah, it was difficult, especially in like the gay New York City world. It's for me, at least, it was challenging because, you know, I wasn't the type of person that really wanted to go out every single night and, you know, hook up with different people. Or I still wasn't in that mentality. And I mean, some of my dearest friends do that. No judgment. That's them. But I also was like, I felt so confident with like where direction we were going in at that point that it was really hard for me to go step backwards and then throw myself into the dating scene and all of that.
So what was that like for you? Like, I guess like building the relationship. I mean, actually I'm wondering what's going through your mind right now as you're hearing his part of the story here.
It's not anything I didn't know already. Sure. So it's not a surprise, but I guess I'm just happy that I could be there for him and I was, you know, someone that could help him kind of like through mm-hmm. some of that, mm-hmm. you know, and even though at the time I didn't know that was the case. Mm-hmm. So that's, I think that makes me feel good.
Mm-hmm. And then, so you guys then, I guess just like the connection, there's just something about the connection that made you feel a trust and a sense of friendship and just this foundation there. How did that then like ramp up to buying property together in 6-7 months?
I mean, I think we kind of realized that we both shared like a similar passion early on, right? It was like our second date or something that we talked about our love and our passion for brownstones and Brooklyn and like the brownstone community and like the, you know, not just the architecture and the beautiful house, but the community that exists in those type of neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. And I think we just knew that we wanted to kind of like share that together and build a home together. And so, yeah, we started looking really quickly. Mm-hmm. I mean, we started dating, I think, like mid-2017, and then we closed on the house probably like mid-2018. So we had to like, you know, we decided to buy a house together. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, way before yeah. we closed on it.
I just remember signing over literally every penny in my bank account over to Barry.
I had done that like five times.
He was like, you're five. I was like, he could just take all of my money and literally run, but
I mean, that's a huge commitment, signing real estate together.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, I think my parents thought I was... My parents met you right before we had closed on our place, right? You came to Vegas. Yeah, he came to Vegas. And they also, at that point, when they saw him...
They're like, he seems crazy.
No, they had my mom was like, I just remember her being like, oh my God, Barry, Barry's amazing. Barry, Barry, Barry. And I was like, yeah.
I mean, how do you guys describe that 7th month? Or I guess, I don't know. Well, that early courtship, because I feel like... I mean, you know, obviously you guys are partners in real life and then business partners too, but just like hearing your story, and I appreciate you sharing about how challenging that was because everyone, you know, has something like that. But then to hear about how you mend or like go through something like that is, you know, it's just so difficult. But then something about that time was like so special. And to me, like, I can't help but wonder, like, it's like, I wish I had that. Or like, that sounds like such a thing you hear in movies. Like, that doesn't happen in real life. Like, being the people who are experiencing that courtship, how do you guys make sense of that time together, of meeting and this kind of all blossoming?
I think, I mean, looking back on it, it's just the type of situation where you forget about everything else when you are with that person. Mm-hmm. And so for both of us, I think, I mean, for me, and I'm assuming for Jordan too, we just, like, everything else was not, I wasn't worried about anything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You were in love.
Yeah, it was.
We were. I say we because at first it actually was pretty scary because after our first date, you stopped talking to me.
Oh yeah, I did do it. Like, it was like, Jordan always bring this up. It was like less than a week that I was like, oh, I don't, you know, like it was felt a little too fast or I got a little freaked out by the fastest. And it was actually very early on because we talked for a couple weeks and then we met and then we went out for a few weeks or so. And then I was like, for some reason, I got a little freaked out and it went a little too fast or
I wanted to like slow it down. Like, when it gets real, they leave.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, right?
What is that?
So then I was like, I don't know. I don't think I'm into this.
Explain yourself.
And I still had my, I was like, okay, cool.
He was like really cool about it. He was like, all right, whatever. And it was only a few days, really. And then I was like,
what was going through your mind?
I don't know. It was like, I think it was just like too fast or too much or too something.
Something like you've never experienced before?
Yeah. Yeah, probably. It was probably what it was. It's something I've never experienced before. And I was like, just had a moment of freaking out about it all.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
But like I said, it was only a few days. It wasn't like a lot. It was probably three days.
Like years.
Probably 3 years.
I was good. And something in the back of my mind was like, he's going to reach out one day. I don't know. Because that first date that we were talking and we like, I mean, that we spent the night together, like just literally talking for a lot of it. I mean, of course.
It's so It is very rare to find just a stranger you connect with that much. I can imagine it is very, it's a lot. Yeah. And in good ways and scary ways too.
Yeah.
Okay, so you guys then bought your brownstone and then...
No, thank you. We just bought a brownstone. So 8 months later, we ended up buying our house together. That really stemmed from us like just having this both mutual understanding that we wanted to own a brownstone. Mm-hmm. And so while we were in the process of buying our place, we both were like, oh crap, our budget is only going to get us this amount of money. That means we're gonna have to take on a lot of this work ourselves. Mm-hmm. How much can you DIY? How much can you DIY? And we were like, okay, we have to learn a lot of things real fast. So that quickly turned to the internet and I was not finding a lot of the answers to a lot of the questions I had. Questions like, how do you restore original woodwork in brownstones? How do you level floors in brownstone? Like all very specific questions. Like, you know what? That's interesting that none of this information is out there. Mm. While I was still at Ample Hills, I was doing a lot. This is around the time of like the boom of Instagram and the boom of social media. And I was doing a lot of their marketing stuff that I was like, you know what? Why don't we kind of turn this into a blog post? Mm-hmm. Maybe somebody will want to read our blog about restoring a brownstone. Let's put a cute little name on there, like the Brownstone Boys. And Barry's like, okay, if that's what you want to do, let's do it. Maybe our friends and family will read it. So we started a blog. We closed on our house. That was our first blog post. And a week after we published on our blog, The Brownstoner, which is a popular Brooklyn real estate website, a lot of locals turn to that for resources. They reached out to us and asked if they wanted us to run a weekly blog on Brownstoner about our personal renovation. Mm-hmm. And we're like, well, that's a good way of keeping up with our blog. So we ended up writing a blog post weekly for the Brown Star for 2 years straight.
Oh, wow. That's not an easy task.
But I mean, it was such a blessing because it put us in front of a community and people start reaching out to us weekly asking us questions about our renovation, about their renovation, about them wanting to buy a place and asking us for advice. We were like, wow, there's this community here that of all people needing help. Mm-hmm. Finally, Barry looked at me and he was like, should we ask them if they need more help? Mm-hmm. Because everyone keeps coming back to us with additional questions. Mm-hmm. And I think that's right when we said, like, should we ask if they want us to help them with their renovation?
Yeah, I think it was probably, we were almost finished with our renovation, but actually not quite. Like, we still were working on our own house. And yeah, we took on our first client, who the couple that became our first client, which we told them, were like, they just really seemed like they needed a lot of help. They just bought a house, was a total wreck. Like, it was like the type of place that, like, someone was like squatting in it. It was like the doors were all kicked in. There was a fridge that, like, you couldn't open because it was like food was rotten in it, and we had to like move it out with it. Was a wreck of a house. And they were just like lost. They didn't know. No one was getting back to them. They couldn't afford anything. Like, they couldn't figure out how to fit it into their budget. And they were really amazing, and we just like really connected with them. And we met them for coffee, and we were like, we know enough at this point to like help you through the process. You know, we had like our resources for everything that we worked on our house with, and of course my previous experiences we've had. And so we were like, we've never done this before. Like, we've never worked with a client, we've never helped someone through it, but we can try. Like, we can do what we can do. And they were like all for it. And so then we had our first client, and that renovation went, I mean, we learned a lot.
Yeah. So much. And there is an interesting twist in this client who are still some of our dearest friends, and we love them. Their house is stunning. But they were also about 3 months into their renovation, they learned they were pregnant with twins. And she was an attorney, but turned to social media influencing full time. She has a beautiful feed. And all while her renovation was happening, since she was dealing with this pregnancy, she was like, oh, I'm going to push you guys on social media so that you guys can kind of take over the renovation on the Instagram, because she didn't want to really do her renovation. So we got in front of a larger audience on social media, which plays an important part of our business now. But we're so thankful for her that not only she trusted us as her, you know, they were our first clients, but also that she educated us and put us in front of a larger audience on social media.
I mean, were you guys not intimidated taking on a massive project like renovating a home? I mean,
yeah,
that's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, we learned real fast because the other previous renovation had all been for us personally, but now we had clients and we had expectations and we had everything, but we got through it. And of course, it was that roller coaster of a ride that any renovation, no matter if you're in New York or back in Summerlin, Las Vegas, you're still gonna go through that roller coaster. But we were really by our client's side from the beginning all the way to the end. Now, till 2 years later, you know, they can reach out to us and they know. And I hope they're listening and they do reach out to us asking if there's anything additional that we can help, because I think that relationship that you go in with your clients in a renovation is kind of the main important part for us in the Brownstone Boys story.
And I think we developed a pretty unique business model, because we like work with clients really closely from the very beginning through the end of their project. So, and we do everything. So we do everything from like helping them wrap their heads around the project, and understanding what the budget needs to be and what the scope of work needs to be and what the possibilities are, to bringing in the architects and the engineers and holding their hand through that process and figuring out the layout of the house and going through the filing and the landmarks and whatever has to happen, to, you know, interior design. So over the years, we've gone more and more and more design to to now, you know, we are interior designers and we sometimes just do interior design projects.
Yeah.
To bringing in the general contractor and managing the construction process and doing construction project management.
Which that's not an easy task, let me tell you.
which is a lot. And kind of like, you know, help, that's where at every point, usually when people renovate a house, it is probably the first time they're ever doing it. Like no one comes into renovating their own house and as experts, because mm-hmm. how many times do you do it in your lifetime? Mm-hmm. Maybe once, maybe someone did one other renovation. For most of our clients, they've never done a renovation. Right. So it's literally the first time. And it's a massive renovation because it's a whole brownstone. Usually it's not just redoing the floors and the walls. It's also all new electrical, all new plumbing, all new HVAC. All new everything.
Yeah, and so. Most of our clients, they're first-time homeowners, they're young families. Mm-hmm. Some of our favorite projects have been the generational projects that they've lived in the house mm-hmm. since they were babies, and just hearing the stories. Mm-hmm. And the home means so many different meanings to so many different people. Mm-hmm. And for me, my favorite part of the job is really that client relationship and having an understanding of what they think home is.
Yeah.
And then making their home for them.
Yeah.
Who doesn't want to be a part of that?
That's so satisfying, because you know when you're sitting at a desk, I'm sure you know this, at like working in software sales, it's like you never really get the satisfaction of like, it's done. Like to renovate and then to have the idea and then to see it finish is such a satisfying feeling. I mean, so I have a little bit of background in renovation. So I've done for like my previous job, we moved offices. So gut to like furniture to everything, I project manage that. I have a little condo I renovated, like
nice.
Tiny 600 something foot condo, tiny.
Nice.
Did all of that. You guys are worth every penny.
Aww.
Because that process is so difficult. Yep. And it's like, it's exactly what you said about people don't have the experience. So what I found hard about doing something like that, whether it was for a commercial space or for a residential space, is you know, it's that relationship with the contractor or whoever you're working with, because I have to just defer to them and say, like, I guess you're right. Like, sure, if you say I need to do this, I guess I need to do it, you know, and it can be easily taken advantage of. So someone to do that's
100%,
amazing.
100%. Yeah. And that's what, you know, I think our clients would say is one of our strongest skill sets mm-hmm. is we, if the contractor is saying one thing, we will give them 4 to 5 explanations around that one thing with solid pricing around that. Mm-hmm. So if a contractor is throwing out one price point, we'll do our homework if we don't already know and make sure that the client has all of that information in front of them.
So at what point are you guys like, okay, we can leave our corporate jobs. We're going to do this full time.
It was after our third client. We were like, this is our third client. We had a full, I want to say like 5 inquiries in our inbox of other people wanting to work with us. And we were like, I think we should bury left first.
And I think it was only a few months after we started the first project. Because once we announced that we had another project mm-hmm. on social media and stuff, I think then it kind of opened the floodgates of people reaching out with projects. And yeah, we had our first project, then our second, then our third relatively quickly. Mm-hmm. And after 3, we were like, okay, we can't keep having like day jobs and then doing this on the side with 3 projects. So yeah, right around then.
And it came at the best time. Everything about, I feel like now that we're talking about this, everything was about timing, and it really came at a great time with Ample Hills. They were going down a path that I was like, I need to have an escape plan. And that's when I felt really good about Brownstone Boys. And I was like, I think we can do something here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's so wild how your stories, like how you guys ended up where you guys are doing design, doing architecture, where you started, like, you know, you got there somehow, which is crazy. Do you guys ever think about, like, I don't know if you guys have like a philosophy around beauty, just because I feel like so much of like interior design, especially, I mean, seriously, your guys' work is so beautiful. Like, do you have like where maybe someone might say, like, what's the place for, you know, that type of investment or having beautiful things or a beautiful space? Like, what is the meaning of that to you guys?
I always go back to like me watching New York in the background on my TV when I was a little kid, and it's very aspirational. And I feel like the homes that we work on are very aspirational. And it's, I mean, now that we've worked on all these homes, I'm even like thinking of our next project and our next personal project of our next home. And I think that's how I can kind of compare the beauty component to the aspiration side, because they are beautiful spaces. And I think we have a good friend that's an interior designer, and he came from a fashion background, and we always love talking with him. Alvin Wayne, if you're listening, love you. But I always think about our conversations around fashion and renovation, and everything should be geared towards like that look and feel that you want, you dream of always being. And that's what your home should be.
And I think that it makes, just like when you, if just with the relating it to fashion, when you are, when you have a new outfit or so, you feel, you look good, you feel good too. And I think your space is the same way. Your space is more functional when you are comfortable in it and it looks nice. And a lot of times it is beauty and it is the way it looks, but it's also just the organization of it and the functionality of it. It makes a really big difference in how you experience your home and you live in your home and you feel in your home when it looks the way you want it to look.
Right. How have you guys evolved in terms of your relationship now being business partners too?
That's a great question, Melissa. So, yeah, I mean, we spent a lot
Should
of...
Should we switch to the wine now?
Yes, please. So we spent a lot of time together. And, I mean, we are dealing with people's every penny, every emotion. And I'm a very emotional... I don't know if you picked up, I'm the emotional one. And I sometimes bring that into our personal life. And that's something that I'm trying to work on, is separating our personal life from our professional life. But unfortunately, we live together, we work together, and we have learned that we have to divide and conquer. Like, we have to have days set aside that Barry can focus, not with me hovering over his shoulder and vice versa, that he, and I think now after 2 years, we've been like, you're really strong at this. He knows what I'm really strong on, and he just lets me run with that, and I let him run with it.
I mean, it's always something to be like really conscious and aware of, and you know, like we can't treat each other like workmates and business partners, but we also have to get work done and do business. So it is, it's funny, like a lot of people ask us how we do it and say they could never do that, and we get a lot of comments and questions around it. But I think it's great. I think it's really cool. I think it's very difficult sometimes, but overall, it's kind of amazing to be able to build a business with your partner and to be able to create something. And, you know, like we have a couple of employees now, and it's just, we pinch ourselves that we even have what we have, and we've been able to build what we've built. And to do it together is pretty amazing and pretty cool and pretty unique, and not a lot of people get to experience that. And although there are difficult times and, you know, like it is hard in a lot of ways, but it's also very fun and, you know, and such a cool experience.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess it really is just about learning each other in the relationship, right? Like how to know if like someone just needs time alone maybe. And then maybe you're like, we need to talk it out right now, or a lot of that dynamic. And sometimes I do wonder if it's like, it is good to be in a relationship with the person you're doing business with, because sometimes in business it is easy to just write someone off, but you're like, okay, now I, like, how can I be a good human being to this person and really consider like what they're saying, what they're thinking, what they're feeling. I mean, yeah, it must help build the relationship as
well. Sure. Yeah. For sure. And there are things that we're still learning. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of keeps it exciting as well, because we're always learning about each other. And just when we think we know everything about each other, there's like a whole nother emotional state that is happening that we're like, oh, that's interesting.
But for each of you while working together, is there anything where it's like, you know, sometimes when someone's like in their zone, it's like they're so attractive because you're like, oh, you're like doing the thing you're good at. Like, look at the way you're writing those budgets or something. Like, is there anything you saw in each other?
Sometimes I do look at Barry when it's usually during the construction meetings, which I'll say this publicly, like Barry is definitely stronger at that than I am. And sometimes he's relaying things over to clients that I think it's so sexy the way he's like talking about this joist. And I'm like, what is what's happening? Like,
yeah, I mean, Jordan's also, he's really creative and he always impresses me with the way he, you know, puts our entire brand together and the marketing around it. And it really is like, it's an art form that I would never be able to do on my own. And I always, it's like none of this would exist if it wasn't for both of us being involved in it. Like I would not, you know, no one would reach out to me to do this on my own, even though I've learned so much about building and how to make it, put everything together and build a kitchen and a bathroom and the measurements and how everything comes together. If it wasn't for all of the social media stuff that we do and the brand stuff and the blog and all the stuff that Jordan's like really amazing at, we wouldn't have any of this and vice versa. So it's like we definitely, us coming together and doing this together is the only reason it exists and it goes well and it goes forward, and we both have to be involved in it.
Yeah. I will say, I mean, I'm sure a lot of people can harp on the unique challenges you might have working together, but I think that's such a unique advantage you have. Cause like, when do you ever get to see your partner at work doing something they're good at? And it's just like, so cool. Yeah. So what's next for you guys? Are you guys going to do like Brownstone Boys and maybe like, I don't know, like some other place or like expansion?
Good question. No. Good question. I mean, we're always wanting new, exciting projects. We've done our first project outside New York. We did it, took on a project in Chicago.
Oh, wow.
Which we had a lot of learnings around that whole project. We actually need to go back there and get our final photos, but it was a really fun experience. We'd love to take on more projects outside New York. I think that would be a dream.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're doing, I don't know, like we may do some fun projects outside the city, which is great. We're also writing a book right now that comes out next year. We actually just finished writing it and now we're going through the whole design process, which is really fun. So it comes out in spring 2024.
Oh my God.
And we're always doing little things, little one-off things with TV. We did a couple of episodes of different shows on the Magnolia Network. The last one that came out is called In With The Old on Magnolia, and it's on HBO Max.
It was a lot of fun doing that. Yeah. And I would love to, if there would be an opportunity to highlight more of the stories in New York and the homes that we get to work on with the families that we get to work on. New York's just such a, I don't need to tell you this, it's such an amazing place with really some of the best people in the world. Yeah. And I would love to, yeah, look at a way to get a renovation show in highlighting that.
Can you guys like take a moment and think to yourself, like, look how far we've come? Like, do you guys feel that? Or do you, I mean, like, what are the feelings you have? Because I it's funny, I was just talking to a friend, she's like just renovated her space and she just had a baby and she's like, I'm not doing enough. I'm like, what more do you want to do? You know, like, are you able to really kind of take in and appreciate like so much of what you've accomplished? I mean, not only professionally, but even like personally.
Yeah, Barry reminds me all the time to do that, which I appreciate, because I'm very, you know, it's hard being on social media and not comparing yourself to others and just this world that we're in, that they put so much pressure on you. And I fall into that category really fast, but Barry always says, stop, look what we've done, look where we're going, look, be like in this moment and just, and I do. And I'm very thankful that I have him by my side to take this in.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, we get caught up in this. Jordan definitely does as well. And I'm sure a lot of people deal with it, is no matter what you accomplish, there's always something more that you feel like you want to do. Mm-hmm. And we always have these, you know, like, I wouldn't even say they're goals, like we write it on a piece of paper and it's a goal, but we achieve things and we don't even like remember that was a goal at some point that we actually just got to, because we're already thinking about the next thing that we need to get to. And if we don't stop and like, you know, relish in the moment of getting to that goal and experiencing those things, and what's the point? Because you're never going to be happy. You're never going to get to a point where you're settled, and there's always going to be the next thing. And so I think that's really important. And I try to make an effort, and I also try to slow Jordan down sometimes and make him like realize it and think about it and create little celebratory moments as much as we can.
What's a celebratory moment look like?
Just like a little, like, for instance, when we will hit like a goal and like, let's go to dinner and like let's have this event around.
It always involves a cocktail.
Like a cocktail or two. Yes. So, you know, let's go have a drink somewhere. Let's like, even if it doesn't have to be a big thing. It doesn't have to be let's throw a party with balloons, but let's like do this thing that is, we're doing it because we're celebrating. And it might just, we go to dinner all the time. Like, it's not a thing that we don't do very often, but if we make this about celebrating this moment, then it puts you in the moment a little bit more and makes you realize it. But I think it's really important, and I think it's something that we need to continue to work on, because there's no goal, there's no top of the mountain to get to. Like, the mountain just keeps going, and it just keeps getting higher, and no matter how high you go, there's always going to be another goal, which is amazing. You never want to get to a point where you're like, okay, that's it. Like, now what? Like, that would be just as bad. But you have to celebrate those little successes too.
It's so hard to know when it's enough too. Like, there's a balance of like wanting to always strive, but also feeling like it's enough. I mean, I don't know. Like, it's a lot to take in. But I mean, you know, just obviously we don't know each other, but just hearing, you know, your story, it is absolutely wild. Like, in 6 years, you guys kind of exploded. And I'm just thinking, like, it takes a certain personality, like moxie and like gumption, to really dive into it and then do it so well. I mean, it makes sense why you guys are also like, not to like, you know, blow smoke up your butts here, but because truly just looking at your work, it's gorgeous. So whoever's listening, like, go look at your page.
Thank you. That means so much. Thank you. Really.
No, it really does. So I'm just shocked that there's like, you guys have done this in such a short period of time. But I'm curious to know, for you guys, since, you know, you said when you design homes for clients, you ask them like, what's the music or what's the style or feel in your home? What is that feeling and music in your home?
For us, it involves lounge jazz, for sure.
Love that.
I'm a jazz person. I mean, I grew up in New Orleans. I've always loved jazz. And so if I'm going to put on music, I mean, I love rock and indie music and that sort of thing too. But I really appreciate jazz and like Billie Holiday and Louis Armstrong.
Which New York is another jazz hub too.
Involves dimmers and lights, because that mood lighting is everything.
It's all about the lighting.
It's all about the lighting, and dimmers are the best way to take care of that. But I mean, we love wood tones, so there's going to be some moody wood throughout the home. Some warmth, and just like these really beautiful historic nods. I think that would describe us.
What do you want to feel when you're at home, though?
I want to feel relaxed. Mm-hmm. I want to feel no pressure to either not do anything, mm-hmm. or no pressure if you have a million things going on.
Jordan also likes things to be organized.
Yes.
If there's not, like, things need to have a place and need to be put away, and he's very unsettled if they're not. And I'm that way too, probably not as much so, but I think that's really important, and that's why it's important when you design a house to make sure that you think about those things. Because if your house is beautiful but you didn't think to build places to put things away, then it's not going to look beautiful, and you're just going to be in a house that's cluttered and a mess. And so I think that's super important.
I mean, you're preaching to the choir. I was telling Barry earlier, I have a organizing business, and that's like such a big part of it too, because it's not so much for the sake of, like, obviously when something's organized, it is beautiful, but really a big part of it is like, how many people do we know where their house is just another chore and they're stressed by their house? And like, if you build systems, it can really help manage that. And then you can just like live in your home more than like working 100%. And managing your home, you know? 100%. So preaching to the choir here on that.
I'm all for that.
Well, just to wrap things up, there's two questions I ask every guest, which is, what do you do for play? Well, we'll start there and then we'll go to the next question. What do you do for play or for fun?
My biggest thing that I do for play and for fun is travel. I love travel. I drag Jordan all over the place. Exactly. I mean, he loves to go too, but usually he's you know, get stressed about work, and I get stressed about work too, but it's not, traveling is more important to me. So we always have something planned.
Okay, what bugs you? Because I feel like you're the level-headed one, but like what stresses you out?
Don't say nothing. What stresses me out? Jordan might know.
What does stress you out? You get stressed out a lot.
But I mean, I do like for things, I feel really good when things are running on, like you said, process, mm-hmm. and I don't like when things are chaotic. And
you're
so
very particular about your sheets too.
Oh, that's
something that stresses them out, which is random.
Getting in the bed where the sheets aren't like in
like
place.
Tight,
yeah, like tight, or the covers are messed up. It drives me crazy. And Jordan usually goes to bed before me, and we have a really big dog, and they're both in the bed, and then I go up there, and the sheets are a mess, and they're both, and the dog is
And I just hear Barry huffing and puffing.
Oh, it drives me crazy. I can't stand that.
Yeah. Maybe go to bed earlier.
Yeah. Thank you.
What about for you?
I would say either riding a bike or walking. Like, it's the best, like, form of me just to relieve all my stress and, like, clear my mind and also get inspiration. Mm. Yeah, so something as simple as that.
Nice. Okay, so last question is, what would you tell your younger self?
Ooh, that's a really good question. I would tell myself not to rush and enjoy things more in the moment.
What about for you?
I think that I would tell myself to live true to yourself and follow your dream as soon as possible, because I think I waited way too long to do what I want to do and be who I want to be. And I look at people today that are in their like early 20s doing that, and I'm like, oh my God, when I was in my early 20s, I was not even thinking about doing what I wanted to do and what I who I wanted to be and where I wanted to be. So I really wish that I would have done that sooner.
That's great. We're going to end it there. That was wonderful. Oh my gosh, you guys are inspirational. Seriously. Aww,
this was so fun. This was honestly like one of a really lovely conversation.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You guys